everybody. What's going on? Welcome to episode number 14 of the Irreverent Babble Podcast. This is Cody Kelly.
And this is Neil Huntley.
And we are so happy that you've come back to join us for some more Irreverent Babble. I have to focus on that so much whenever I do that intro because, you know, like how we... Because we'll do it like five takes before I'll actually get that part.
Yep.
Right? After that.
14 weeks in, we still have to practice every now and then. But
oh, yeah.
It's all good. Hey, Cody, how you doing, man?
I'm actually doing pretty good, Neil. I mean, I actually had my wisdom teeth taken out this past weekend.
Yeah, I was about to ask. You look like you had a few extra holes in your head today.
Yes. Yes, I actually do. I had my wisdom teeth taken out this past Friday, and... Just to kind of put it lightly, this past weekend was not really that fun because I couldn't eat anything I normally eat, and I had a very hurt mouth. I had a very hurt mouth. It was very sore this weekend, but I'm on the mends now. I can actually talk regularly now. I can actually, you know, like I can talk, actually have a normal conversation.
Your face doesn't look swollen anymore.
Yes.
Sunday, you like a squirrel hoarding acorns. I'm not saying
I did have a pretty swollen face.
You could tell that you had some work done a couple days ago. But you're back to your pretty self today, Cody.
Oh, well, thank you, man. I appreciate that.
That's the only time I'm going to call a man purdy on this recording. But he's looking good and back to normal.
Oh, yeah, man.
That's awesome.
Yes. Yes, so I had that done this past weekend, and I just, you know, kind of spent this weekend chilling out, watching some more live sports, watching my Boston Red Sox lose a whole bunch of games, but still, I had a lot of fun. I've been enjoying this past weekend of just, you know, getting relaxed and chilled out. I'm getting ready to start fall classes here in a few weeks for the community college classes I'm taking. It'll be my last year in community college to take any of these classes.
Sweet.
So I'm looking forward to that. So
yeah. Well, did you get any ice cream this week?
I actually did. Yes.
Nice.
I did. And it tasted very good.
So it consisted of ice cream, probably some mashed potatoes.
It was
some soup maybe.
It was pretty much mashed potatoes, ice cream for dessert, water, some more water, and a little bit of pudding mixed in.
Oh, yeah. I don't miss that by any means. I had mine out when I was in 10th grade, I think. And, yeah, I don't miss that at all. So I'm glad you got that done and over with.
Yes, I am too. I just kind of hope that I'm finished with having things done to my mouth now because I've already had some teeth taken out, and then I had braces for 3 years, you know, and the rubber bands and all that stuff, and then I had to have my wisdom teeth taken out. So now I'm just kind of ready to have my mouth be finished with doing any kind of procedures on my mouth and just move on.
Yeah, y'all didn't know this was a dental podcast, did you?
No, not really.
About teeth for what, the first 5 minutes or so?
Yeah, the first 5 minutes I was talking about teeth. All right. All righty, man. Well, what that pretty much sums up what happened to me in the last week, just teeth and more teeth. So how about you?
Well, a lot of things happened in my house. Well, not in my house, but, you know, in my daily walk, my life in the past week or so. School started back for my wife. You know, she's a school teacher.
Right.
So they started back with the handful of kids that they get each day. Our school system right now is doing something where they have a handful of kids in person at school every day, like a different set of kids, and then the other ones are doing online. So it's a little complicated. It's a little tiring.
Oh, yeah.
I think Amber was in bed at 8:30 last night.
Oh,
man. Go to sleep. But, I mean, she has to get up early, too.
Right.
But we're getting that rolling. It's encouraging to have some sense of a normalcy.
Oh, right.
In the house because, you know, I'm sure even though it's a very, very odd schedule for her, it probably feels good for her to go to work, you know?
Right.
Because it's not...
Instead of being at home and
right.
having that kind
and
of weird feeling.
She hadn't been, like, stuck at the house, you know, things like that. But she's been at home about 90% of the time since March.
Right.
You know, so it probably...
Oh, I know.
It feels good for me knowing that she has gone to work, you know?
Right.
And I'm sure it feels good for her to be going to work, too, and to get grandma in a routine of going to daycare. Knock on wood, I think we've broken the curse of coming home with a fever.
Hey, so there you go.
The
That's
ear infections
good.
Are gone. The fevers are gone, finally. And he's back to running around and acting like his normal crazy self. But other than that, we went on a date Friday night. Went up to much-needed date night, Amber and I.
Nice.
We went up to Charlotte. Went over to South Park to eat some food.
Ooh, okay.
And Look, I'm all for wearing a mask if that makes you feel safe, you know, and all right. That's a thing to make other people around you feel comfortable to wear one, especially in a public setting.
Oh, yeah.
That's fine. But to wear one into a restaurant just to walk. Okay. Let me backtrack.
Okay.
I'm not wearing a mask in my car. Right.
Right.
Okay. That's pointless to be either be
right,
just
wear
by
it in
myself
the car. Yeah,
or be with my wife and we wear a mask. I don't see the point in that. So we put a mask on when we get out of the car in Charlotte to walk into the restaurant.
Right.
Right. And then when we sit down, we take the mask off.
Right.
Okay. I don't understand the whole thing between the 10 feet between the door and the table where we have to.
Right. Move.
But that's beside the point. I'm not getting, you know, I'm not trying to step on any toes. I just wanted to, you know, let that be known that I don't understand that. Not, but it's not that I'm against it. Oh. I just don't understand it.
Right.
You know what I mean? But in the craziness of that thought, while I was thinking, why do I have to wear a mask between the door and 20 feet away from this table? In the process of thinking that, I look over.
Yeah.
And there is an NFL Pro Bowl kicker,
yes,
NFC champion kicker, Graham Gano, hanging out on a date night with his wife two tables over from us.
Wow.
And, you know, this is a place where I've been. It's called the Cowfish. I'm just no free advertisement. Sorry, Cody. But this is a place called the Cowfish. It's in South Park. I've been there a handful of times and seen some athletes there. That's the place where I saw the offensive lineman for the Panthers.
Okay.
I've seen some other people there as well. So I went in there almost expecting to see somebody. You know?
Oh, yeah, I know. I mean, you know, it's like you don't walk into a restaurant just randomly thinking you're going to see a
right.
NFL player yeah. in there.
So I just happen to look over and I see him, and I don't make a big deal of it at first. I just kind of like chuckle to myself, and we get to our table. I say, Amber, that guy over there facing the window, that's Graham Gano. She said, what? I said, hold on a second. Hold on. I said, we need to, I want to go say something to him because, you know, he don't play for the Panthers anymore.
Right.
They cut him.
Right.
And so, but some time.
He got released.
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
Some time went on.
I was very sad about that.
We ordered our food. I could tell that they had just put their order in. I didn't want to interrupt their meal by any means, you know. So I finally said, okay, this is probably the best window to go. Just say hey, you know, and
oh, yeah.
just be done with it. And that's all I was going to do, was say hey and just appreciate what you did and good luck, you know, because I don't know this guy. I've seen him on TV for years. I mean, he played for the Panthers for several seasons, right?
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know how this person acts off the field, you know? So I just walk over, and I say, hey, man, I don't want to keep you long, but just want to say appreciate what you did for
oh, yeah.
us and good luck and everything. And he said, hey, man, how you doing? What's your name? So I talked to him for a little bit, and I was like, well, now I got to tell him this story. I said, my wife over there, when you kicked the big field goal against the Giants a couple years ago, that 63-yarder.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, at that time, my wife was pregnant, and we had not decided. We knew it was going to be a boy, but we had not decided on what his name was going to be. And so I told him, I said, after you made that field goal, right before you kicked it, like literally as you were lining up to kick it, I told my wife, I said, if he makes this, we need to really consider Graham being a name. And she said, okay, all right. And he kind of, you know, he smiled
okay.
about like, no, he was all into it. And he made it. And the more Amber heard that name over and over, we finally said, yeah, Graham's it. I said, so my son's name's Graham. And I think you making that field goal helped make that happen.
Hey.
And he was like, no way. Like, your son's name's Graham too. He said, I don't meet a lot of Grahams. He said, can I walk over and talk to your wife? I said, yeah, just come on. I mean, I went over there.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
I went over there just for a 5-second conversation, and
oh, yeah.
it turned into a 5-minute conversation and everything. He wanted to see a picture of Graham. He talked to my wife and things like that.
That is awesome.
It was really cool. And then the next day we find out he signed with the Giants. So we saw him one of his last couple nights in Charlotte, but that was a really cool experience, you know.
Oh yeah, man,
usually
that's awesome.
We talked about it on the podcast before, you know, usually we see people and just kind of either wave or say, hey, appreciate what you do, and it moves on. But we had an actual conversation
right.
with this guy, you know, which was really encouraging to see. And I know he's a Christian too, so that was encouraging
yeah.
to see him, you know, walking like he talks too, like we've talked about on here before.
Oh yeah.
But after that we went to Top Golf, played golf for about an hour. Never seen my wife swing a golf club. That was pretty funny. But we had a good time with that as well.
Question.
Yes, sir.
Question. Did you hit one over the golf fence like my dad did?
No, I did not hit one over the net. No. I made it pretty far. I hit one that was a moonshot because used to it was just a tracker that would tell you when you scored. Now there's the video screen tells you how high it went,
right,
the launch angle, like, and how far it went. I hit one that was like 300 feet up in the air. It didn't go too far, but it went way up in the air.
Wow, that's cool.
I was afraid I was going to hit one of the airplanes taking off at Charlotte Douglas. but we had a good time. It was a great date night. And on top of that, we got to meet an NFL player, Graham Gano. So that was pretty cool.
Wow.
I should have told him about the podcast, man.
Oh, you should have. Why didn't you tell him about the podcast?
Sorry about that.
Man.
Yeah. But it's another great
NFL
week.
Player knows about our podcast, man. We could have gotten that. Oh, well.
It'll be all right.
Yeah,
we'll all have right. another chance later.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. I'm sure. Oh, by the way, whenever you're going to South Park next, invite me like on a on a date and a half or something, just so like a date and a half, because I don't have a girlfriend. So like I'll just be the awkward third. I'll be like the awkward third wheel guy. But then if we meet any pro athletes, I at least get to actually
there you go
meet somebody. All right, so that'd
be cool. We'll see if we can make that happen. That sounds good, Cody. But we got a good show lined up, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh yes, we do. As always,
we got a good Double Play Devo coming up. We got some very interesting sports stories coming up.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Cody and I both will be getting on soapboxes.
Yes, we will today.
Whew. Let's take a break because we're going to need it. Hey, y'all. It's Neil here. While Cody and I are sitting back, taking a little break, maybe taking a sip of water or who knows what. Just want to thank y'all for listening to the podcast. We got a good show lined up today. And just wanted to let you know that if you hadn't subscribed yet, please subscribe if you're on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and so many more. If you want to get in touch with us and you don't see our beautiful faces every day, you can email us if that's what you're into, reverendbabble@gmail.com. We're on Twitter at Reverend Babble. There's links to mine and Cody's personal Twitter accounts on that page as well. We're also on Instagram and Facebook now, at Reverend Babble on Instagram, keeping it simple. And just search Reverend Babble Podcast on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a follow. If you want to talk to us, like I said, we'll talk right back. But enough of that. Let's get back to the show.
All right, and we're back. Welcome to the Double Play Devo portion of the show. This is basically the portion of the show, you know, where we just talk about different biblical topics and stuff that comes across our minds. And like we said a couple weeks ago, we love to talk about sports. Both Neil and I love to talk about sports. And this is obviously a part of the sports podcast, but this is also a Christian podcast. And we love to just talk about how Jesus has impacted our lives and changed us throughout our experiences, and just hoping we can share those experiences with you guys.
Yeah, and this is kind of a joke, but kind of serious at the same time. I don't know what I would have done with my time during this pandemic, especially without sports, if I didn't have God to turn to. Like, seriously.
Oh, yeah.
You know, my role at the church has been great, because even though it had to change a little bit doing the Zoom calls at the beginning of all this, doing
right.
YouTube videos and all that, I got to pour into y'all, and y'all got to pour into me too. I mean, I on Wednesday nights I'm talking to y'all at standing up talking in front of y'all, but I get just as much out of it from y'all as y'all do from me. And it's a two way street, and it's a two way blessing. But you know, I don't know, and this is not a dig at anybody that's a non-believer at all, but I don't know how y'all have handled this whole crazy year so far. Because without God, I don't know where I'd be right now.
Or right.
I don't know how I wouldn't be calm and all that stuff. But that kind of leads into this Devo, but it starts out with a question, Cody.
Okay.
All right. Simple question, okay?
I'm not
going to try to throw you for a loop or anything. Have you changed since you've been born?
Yes.
Like, since you were newborn, have you changed?
Yes, I have.
Okay, how in what ways have you changed?
I've changed physically. I've gotten older. I've gotten taller. I've learned a lot of things since I was born. Like, so I learned how to talk and things with school and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so you've grown. You've changed physically, mentally.
Right.
You've grown spiritually
as well. Right.
But I'm saying, since the beginning of your life, you have changed a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Since the beginning of my life, I have changed a lot. Okay? I wasn't born 6'5", and that's a good thing, right? I wasn't born talking, and because a baby talking, you know, as I don't speak great English, but a baby talking full-on English or whatever language, that's a little creepy, right?
Yeah.
But we are created to change as life goes on, right?
Right.
And as funny as it kind of seems, sometimes people start out in diapers and end out in diapers when they get older.
Yes.
But saying all that to say, we change over time.
Right.
Whether that's physically, whether that's mentally, whether that's in different ways of life, we change. You know something that doesn't change? It's God. God doesn't change.
Right.
God was the same before he created the heavens and the earth. He'll be the same after what transpires in the book of Revelation. He doesn't change. He just is.
Right.
And that's what I want to talk about today about, you know, people talk about times have just changed so much. You know, just talking about like how coronavirus and the upcoming elections, which is a whole nother craziness on its own.
Yeah.
And we're not getting into that.
No.
Stuff in this, and just this year alone, has changed tremendously since 2019.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Years change.
A ton.
Change happens from year to year. It does. But I've never seen something this drastic before. And I'm not trying to surround this by COVID because I'm tired of talking about COVID, let alone hearing about it.
Right.
But I'm surrounding this on no matter what changes come in life, whether it's in your life or whether it affects everybody's life, God doesn't change. And that leads into the scripture today that I found for us. And Cody, if you'll read the one out of Hebrews.
All right.
I mean, that one's a perfect way to start out. So
oh, yeah.
It's, tell them where it is.
It is in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 8. And it's pretty much, like you said, it's pretty much, you know, pretty straightforward. And it says, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever.
Yeah, you could hit the stop button right now. We could take a break, but we're not going to. It's mentioned so many other places in Scripture. We're just narrowing it down to three places today. But, I mean, he's the same yesterday, today, and forever to go. And I know I'm just repeating exactly what you said, but it's saying that for a reason.
Right.
Okay? He doesn't change. He's there with you on the hills. And he's there with you when things are going perfectly, right? Well, as close to perfect as they can get,
right?
And he's there with you in the valleys in those really dark times, whether you're struggling with this sin, with this addiction that you just, for some reason, can't not get rid of. That's because you're trying to do it on your own. But he's with you during a time of loss, during a time of need. You know, he doesn't forget you in the bad times. He doesn't look away from you in the bad times, okay? He's there with you every single day. And has not changed one bit. We change. I sound like a broken record, but we move back and forth in our walk with Christ.
Oh, right? Yeah.
But he doesn't move. He can't move. He's not. Nobody designed God, okay? God is, okay? And God created us to be creatures of change. We're going to change over time. He doesn't change. He's not a creature, okay? Nobody created him. Therefore, he's not a creature. But these great things come from him. Just like it says in James, it says every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. So another fancy way of saying he doesn't change, okay?
Right.
And that's think about it, it's like the sunshine, okay? As the day goes on, think about the sunshine shining on a tree. Okay. As the day goes on, that shade will turn according to where the sun's shining on it from, right?
Right.
That's a change.
It'll be on one side of the tree, the shade will, on the first part of the day, and then by the end of the day, before the sun goes down, it'll be on our side of the
tree. Right. Hence, there's a change in the way the sun moves, right? Well, the S-O-N, sun, capital S, doesn't change, okay? People sometimes get confused and think, especially non-believers, wasn't Jesus and God two different people? No, they're not.
No.
And that leads me into the final scripture today. It says at the beginning of John chapter 1, it says, in the beginning was the Word. And this is capital W, so it's meaning God. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Okay, so that's hinting back to Genesis, to the creation of everything, right?
Right.
The Word, there was the Word at the beginning. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. And then if you scoot down in the same chapter, just a few verses down, verse 14, it says, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as the one, as the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth." That's Jesus, okay? Jesus, 100% man, 100% God, okay? God came down here to be with us in the form of a man, that man being Jesus.
Right.
So even though there's God and there's Jesus, they are all in one because they're also there with the Holy Spirit. It's really hard to sometimes fathom, you know, because our
human, oh, I know. It's like our human minds can't really comprehend three in the same thing. Yeah, it's weird.
Right. But the Word has not changed. God has not changed. This Bible has not changed over time, okay? This Bible that was written and designed to make sense to us, to show us that this is the one true God. And I'll close out with talking about this. If you don't think that the Word is true, that God is true, listen to how the Scripture is designed, how God's Word is designed, okay? And I'm somewhat borrowing this from Preacher Barry at church.
Okay.
In Genesis, it talks about how it all began, right? In Revelation, talks about how it all ends. Okay?
Right.
For y'all that don't know, Genesis is the first book. Revelation is
the last one.
Right. It's the bookends of the Bible. So Genesis talks about how everything was created, how it all begins. Revelation is talking about how it all is destroyed, right? And how it all ends.
Right.
In chapter 3 of Genesis, Satan shows up as a serpent.
Right.
Okay? In chapter 20, which is the third to the last chapter in Revelation, Satan, that's his final end. Okay. He's defeated. He goes away. All right. And the first two chapters of Genesis, God is creating. And in the last two chapters of Genesis, God is recreating the new heaven and new earth.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
How awesome is that?
Wow, that's a really cool parallel.
And think about how far apart those books are written from each other, right?
Right.
Because we're pretty sure that Moses wrote a lot of the Old Testament, right?
Yeah.
Especially those early on.
Right.
And we know John wrote Revelation. So God doesn't change. What God promised to Abraham forever ago still holds true today, okay? And what he promises you and tells you, he's going to hold strong to that. He needs you to hold strong to that too. God doesn't change.
All right. And with that note, we will be right back with some sports.
I got the soapbox out.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, save some for me.
All right.
Hey everybody, what's going on? I hope you guys are enjoying the show. Just wanted to take a second just to let you guys know that if you have any prayer needs or just something on your mind, you can always contact us through our social medias. They are in the show notes in the description of this podcast. And just always wanted to let you know that that's always available. If you just want to talk to somebody, if you have any questions, just let us know. And I hope you guys are having a great day. And now back to the show.
It's sports time. Time to update y'all on the week that was and the world of sports and what a week that it was. This is
The Weekly Score. Hey, we did it again. Nice.
Like it. Good job, Cody.
Yeah.
We'll have to keep that rolling for a little bit.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right.
That's definitely cool.
Won't you bat leadoff for us this week?
All right. I see what you did there.
You're welcome.
I see what you did there. All right. So, as always, I got some baseball news. Now, this is actually not about the Boston Red Sox yet. It's not.
Yet.
Yet.
I can't throw that in there.
Yet. Man. Okay, anyway. The Cleveland Indians. It's been a topic. If you've been watching baseball the past week or so, this has been a topic that's kind of been...
Hold on. Do they still have their name, the Indians?
Yes, they
do. Okay, so not just the Clevelands or anything?
No.
Okay.
No.
Right, just make sure.
Oh yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's all good. But anyway, the Cleveland Indians have been kind of a topic in the baseball world the last week or so because about a week or so ago, maybe a little bit more than that ago from the recording of this podcast, two of the Cleveland Indians pitchers, Mike Clevinger and Zach Plesac, were sent to the team's alternate training site, which is kind of, I guess you can call their minor leagues, which they don't have, but right. you know, but they can't send them really anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent two of their starting pitchers, two of their five guys that they have in the rotation to their alternate site for breaking team protocol and leaving their hotel to go hang out with some buddies
Uh-oh.
While they were in Chicago playing the Cubs last week.
Uh-huh.
So they've violated team, you know, protocol. I mean, you know, they violated team protocols, which obviously under normal circumstances is not good. But, you know, one of the big things that they added, obviously, you know, for the rules this year, you know, because of COVID, is that you can't, well, like, if you're actually playing games, you can't be, you can be at the field or the hotel. You can't be anywhere else.
Was it a baseball player that claimed he went out to go get some milk one night? Was that a baseball player?
I'm not sure, honestly.
I think it was a baseball player. I cannot tell you who it was, but his reasoning for breaking the rules was, I really wanted a glass of milk.
Okay, that's honestly a very sad excuse.
But I mean, Manfred, I got on Manfred a couple weeks ago and told him, not told him directly, like, hey, Rob, come in here and have a seat. No, I said, you know, if you want to do something about it, you have the power to do something about it. Do it, right? And he's kind of cracked down on him and told him, hey, get this under control.
Right.
Or we're going to shut it down.
Oh, yeah.
Guys like that, if it's the small group of people that don't listen is what ruins it for everybody.
Right, it's what causes it. And, you know, and it's honestly things like that, in my opinion, is what caused both the Marlins and the Cardinals to both have their big outbreaks
Had. Well, I'm pretty sure they found out a lot of the Marlins players went out.
Right,
you know, after games and partied and whatnot. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that goes to show you that.
It
happens.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we've seen since March that you can get this thing from wherever, you know, and they keep finding out more ways that you can get it. I'm confused now. I don't know. But, you know, just if you have rules
that
your job depends on, listen to them.
Oh, yeah.
Come on. I'm not even on the soapbox yet, Coach.
I'm not even on the soapbox yet. Yeah. Yes. Oh, what's honestly kind of makes the situation a little bit worse is that one of the two Plesac, he was actually caught first. You know, he was caught first, and then the team had a meeting about it,
uh-huh.
and then found out that Plesac went out, and then really the main guy that defended him was Mike Clevinger.
Oh.
Well, then they found out, like, the next day that Clevinger was actually with him.
So he told on himself.
With him. And so, basically, Mike Clevinger made himself look bad because he basically lied to the team, to their face.
Yeah.
And then what happened afterwards is that the next day after that, Zach Plesac kind of posted a video, and it was basically his version of an apology video, but it was more of a justification video mm-hmm. than anything else. Like, he was basically kind of justifying what he did. So once both of them kind of showed their true colors based off the situation, the Cleveland Indians sent both of them to their alternate training site, which is obviously good. You know, I mean, you know, you violate the rules, you should be punished in some way.
Yeah.
But what happened was that, while they were in the decision making of this process, at least one of the players on the Indians, one of their relievers, relief pitchers, Oliver Perez, said that he actually threatened to opt out of the season if both of them were still on the roster.
Wow.
So, you know, because of what they did, they sent them down.
And at least they should be quarantined for 2 weeks without pay.
Right.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
You purposely violated the rules. You didn't just accidentally, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, I forgot. You didn't forget.
Right.
Yeah. Come on, man.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, so that was a big ordeal that took place with Cleveland last week. You know, but despite both those players doing what they did, they actually lead the majors in ERA with a 2.43 ERA as of recording this video in pitching. So as far as their pitching goes, as far as their pitching has gone so far this year, they've done extremely well, and I just hope that the Indians will continue to do well without those two guys for as long as the team chooses to punish them for.
Sure.
And all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, as long as the team, you know, punishes them for. Okay, so in other news, this is just a quick little thing. The CFL actually canceled their 2020 season.
Oh.
So that is another league in North America that has canceled their season. You know, like, obviously back in, what was it, April, the XFL canceled the rest of their season because of financial things and other things like that.
They
slightly
ran out of money.
Yeah, pretty much.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah, pretty much. So that happened. So that happened in April, and now the CFL canceled their season. So it kind of makes you wonder what the NFL Are they going to change any plans this season?
I don't think so.
I would be surprised if they do. Yeah. Well, like you just said, I'd be surprised if they change their plans. I mean, like, especially now because the season's like less than a month away now.
Yeah,
I don't see how that's going to happen.
I'm pretty
now.
Sure the Texans and Chiefs play on the 10th of September.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't see anything changing.
I don't mean to sound this as sounding arrogant or cocky. I don't have much concern about them playing at all. I mean, has Major League Baseball have they had problems in their style of playing? Yes. It's not going to be perfect. But, I mean, and not to take away from your stories because I know you got a couple more things to mention.
Oh, no, it's all right.
But, I mean, the Chiefs already announced that they're going to have some fans in the stands for this first game.
Really?
22% capacity of that stadium. That stadium holds over 70,000 people. So that's, I don't know, I'm not the best mathematician right off the top of my head. That's like 15,000 people at
right.
a football game. You know, NASCAR's had people at the races. I'll get NASCAR in a little bit, but I'm not concerned about this NFL season. They seem like they've had their stuff under wraps, which they've had plenty of time to take notes of
right.
other leagues too. But yeah, I'm not concerned about NFL really.
Yeah. I don't honestly see it having a major impact on the NFL season either.
No.
I was just kind of curious what your thoughts were because another major North American football league canceled their season this year. So I was just kind of wondering what your thoughts were about that as well.
Yeah. I mean, the CFL, they have some great highlights here and there, and they are fun to watch here and there when I do see them on TV, just because they kind of have a different set of rules. Their field is much bigger.
Right. Their field's like 110 yards?
Yeah. Well, no, an NFL field's 120 yards because it's 10 yard end zones. But
as far as like the playing field,
their end zone is, I want to say 15 or 20 yards deep.
Oh, yeah.
And they had the field goal post on the goal line, which is pretty crazy, too. But I mean, that stinks for them because, I mean, they have limited funds. They're not a multi-billion-dollar company like the NFL. So
right.
Hopefully they'll be able to bounce back from it. But, other than that, it stinks for them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. All right. So in other news, though, the NBA playoffs as well as the NHL playoffs began play since our last episode aired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've honestly had a lot of fun watching some NBA basketball play again. And like, obviously, like, you know, like any form of sports in the playoffs is obviously just a lot of fun to watch. It's a completely different atmosphere to watch. It's been a lot of fun.
I need to control my sports takes on here. You know why?
Why?
Because I said something bad about Markakis and how he shouldn't come back. And he's been on a tear with the Braves. I mentioned how great the Hurricanes looked so far, and they're now down 3-1 to the Bruins,
blew a 3-0 lead last night.
Let's not talk about that.
I'm just saying.
So maybe I should be concerned about NFL season. Maybe I should say, I'm scared of death, so to happen. Yeah, I don't know. but it has been fun watching live sports. It has. I mean, the NBA playoffs last night.
Yes.
And the games today. I mean, I just told you that we just saw it 10 minutes ago that the Magic
beat the Bucks. Yeah,
that's
I know.
A 1-8 seed matchup right there. And they beat the Bucks 122-110. So, I mean, that's a pretty – they didn't just squeak by. That's a win.
Yeah.
That's a solid win in the NBA.
Sure.
Last night's first round of games was – they were very entertaining as well.
Absolutely.
It's been great to have live NBA and
live hockey.
And we're going to have, hopefully, live NFL here soon, too.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That'll be a lot of fun. And just kind of something funny I wanted to point out is that I was actually watching a little bit of the Avalanche versus Coyotes game yesterday.
Yeah.
I've never seen 7 goals ever in a hockey game.
That's impressive.
It's like 7 combined goals, let alone by one team.
And I've watched the Hurricanes here and there. I watched them a lot in the playoffs last year, and I've watched a good amount of the games this year too. I won't consider myself a diehard hockey fan, but I do.
No.
I mean, I support the local team, even though they're all the way up in Raleigh. Should be in Charlotte, but that's another point. Why are hockey intermissions so daggone long?
I don't understand why they're so long either. And here's the thing, though. Like, that's the one thing that will make me hesitant about watching a hockey game.
It really
will. Because once, you know, it's like I'll be watching the first period, and then I'll be watching the first period, and it's cool to watch, you know, because it's like, you know, like action packed back and forth for however long, you know, it takes to get the first period over. But then I'm waiting like 20 plus minutes to watch the next period.
And
you know me, I don't like to wait that long.
Yeah, and I don't mean any disrespect to hockey at all. I just
no, same here.
I don't understand it, and especially don't understand it when you get to overtime. Like that game, who was it that went five overtime?
Who was that?
Well, it was a Penguins or somebody, wasn't it? Go ahead.
Hold on. Go ahead. I'm looking it up right now.
But while you're looking it up, why in the world do you have to have intermission in between each overtime?
I don't honestly know.
Just keep
going.
It's overtime.
It's overtime. Keep it going.
It's sudden death anyway. Keep going to keep the game over with. I mean, I get if you need to break into play for commercials and all that stuff, but we don't need an intermission show in between each overtime period. Have you found it yet?
Yeah, I did. It was the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Oh, okay. I said the Penguins. That shows you how much I follow hockey outside of the Hurricanes when I watch them.
All good.
Sorry.
But yeah.
But that game took forever.
Oh, I know.
The Hurricanes.
That game lasted
7 hours?
Yeah,
or so.
7 hours.
Hurricanes and Bruins were supposed to play after them, and that game ended so late that there was no way they could have played the other game. So we had to play, I watched Hurricanes all the time, but the Hurricanes had to play the next day at 11 a.m., which is a crazy start anyway.
Right.
But at work, I kept up with it here and there at my breaks and whatnot. And when I got back from lunch, I saw that they were still playing. So I said, I'll listen to it, you know. And after lunch, I worked from 1 to 3.
Right.
That game lasted after 3 o'clock.
That's insane, man.
I don't mean any hate towards hockey at all. I don't understand the long intermissions. I get it in the three-period segment.
Right.
But once you get overtime, I don't understand.
No, it's just like it's overtime.
To go back to the locker room. I mean, maybe because of the Zamboni and having to redo the ice, that makes sense. But
yeah,
I don't understand. But yeah. But it's live sports. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Oh, yeah, man. Same here. For sure. Alrighty, man. So that's all I got for this week for sports this week. Other than the fact that my Red Sox are like 10, 11 games under 500, I'll just end my segment on that.
Braves are in first place in the East.
And the Braves are in first place in the East. And okay.
All right.
And that's it on that. All right, man. How about you?
All right. NASCAR.
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 I'm not going to say it again, but.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to say it again. NASCAR had a race at Daytona Road Course this past Sunday, not the Oval, which we'll come back to in a couple of weeks. You know, Daytona is the famous racetrack where the Daytona 500 is, hence was Daytona, right?
Right.
Great American Race. This time we were on the road course.
On the road
First
course.
First time here. Ever that the NASCAR Cup Series was on this road course. This is not a brand new track at all. The road course at Daytona has been around for a while. In fact, they even run, and this isn't a NASCAR race at all, but they even run a 24-hour race on the road course.
Oh, really?
Which is crazy to think about.
Wow, that's cool.
If you ever seen the movie Ford versus Ferrari, they run a 24-hour race in there, and it's pretty neat to see how they strategize that and race 24 hours. Now, one person's not in the car 24 hours. They'd switch drivers, but still, to keep a car running 24 hours.
Right, for 24 hours.
That's crazy.
That's nuts.
But this was the first time that the Cup Series has been on that road course. The series' most popular driver, but hands down, won. Chase Elliott won.
Chase Elliott, right.
He ran a good race. He timed out his pits just right. His pit strategy was right on point. I mean, he's got some of the best equipment, with it being Hendrick Motorsports and all. But, you know, great job, Chase. Absolutely great job for that as well. But I got to get on my soapbox about this race, Cody.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you why.
Why?
So the whole point of me saying this race was going to be exciting was that there's not many of them have any clue how this track plays out, right?
Right.
A few of them do because they've raced in that 24-hour race. And some of them have had a handful of turns on the simulator. But it's nothing for the real track, right? Just kind of gets you in the mindset.
Oh, right.
So If you didn't see the race, it started on the normal oval of Daytona, which, you know, Daytona, there's no really braking. You just kind of go all out, and it's designed to go as fast as you can. So you start on the oval, go past start-finish line, and then you have to brake hard and turn left into the infield. I mean, it's a hard, sharp turn into the infield. And you imagine 40 cars going as fast as they can and all of a sudden braking, let alone being a stock car, which there's no taillights, you know, so you can't you don't really tell. So that was supposed to just be complete and utter chaos to start out the race, right? You know what was found out after the race started?
What?
That the two leaders, that'd be Kevin Harvick and Denny Hamlin, the people that started out in the front row, and the two people behind them, they strategized how they were going to race that first lap together.
Really?
Yeah, they all agreed on a way, on a pinpoint of where to brake on these turns so they could keep control of the race on the first lap. I don't like that.
Wow, that is nuts. Not one bit.
Because, I mean, if your teammates, like if it was the Gibbs cars trying to strategize, that's one thing. If it was the Hendrick guys, your teammates, you're supposed to strategize in some form of fashion. But at the end of the day, even though you're on a team, this is an individual sport where you're trying to win the race.
Oh, right.
I didn't like that it was people from different teams.
Why different teams coming together and strategizing.
I didn't like that at all. This is supposed to be racing. You know what you do in a race? You're trying to beat the person beside you, no matter what. Who cares where they're going to stop at? Scoot past them and get in front of them. And that's exactly what happened, by the way. They all agreed on one stopping point, or I'm not going to say stopping point, but a braking point where they would brake into the turn, right?
Right.
And three guys braked. Denny Hamlin scooted right on in front of them.
Oh. Right?
And Smart, I don't know if he did it on purpose or he missed the brake time or they braked a little too early. I didn't like that. I don't like, especially when the team, when there's drivers on rival teams, you can call them rivals, especially when it's two different manufactured cars, when it's Fords and Toyotas and whatnot.
Right.
I didn't like that one bit when I found that out. That completely takes away from the competition of a brand new track.
Right.
Of that first lap.
It kind of took away from the competitive edge and the kind of nervousness you were kind of thinking of, okay, well, these are like big name racers, what are they going to do?
Right.
And then you find out that they were planning
because
it like
the whole
that.
Hype of this race was it's unknown for right. a lot of, even Kevin Harvick, who is the hottest driver in NASCAR right now, you know, his own fire with all these wins he's racked up this year. He said, I feel bad for whoever's behind me because I don't know what I'm going to do going into turn one. And then it turns out that him and Hamlin and some other guys strategized their plan together for turn
one. Basically, he said that just to kind of get the media juices flowing a little bit.
But, I mean, if it's in the point of let's do this so we don't get wrecked in turn one and to save our cars, that's one thing. But race. Just go racing, man.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not saying go out there and wreck each other and be a bunch of jerks and whatnot. But compete. Don't strategize with the other team, let alone a rival driver. Come on. No. No way. But, you know, like I said, Chase won. Martin Truex would have won. But he had a penalty on pit road and where he was supposed to go sit on pit road, but pit road was closed at the moment. So he had to sit and make and go a lap down instead.
Oh,
no, not go a lap down, but go to the back of the pack.
Oh, that's terrible.
And he went from 40th to, I think, either third or fourth by the end of the race, which and that time it was the last segment when that happened. So if the race had been five more laps, we might be talking about Martin Truex winning and not Chase Elliott. But still, a great race. It was a little boring here and there because it's a 3.5 mile track. I mean, that's a long track.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're used to racing on 2.5 miles max. But I think that should be a definite usual visit on one of these tracks. Don't give up one of these classic races or another oval track to make up for this one, but try to find a way to make this into one of the road courses. That was fun to watch.
It's a good change of pace from what you normally see, on a regular race day.
Yeah, we're not used to seeing these stock cars turn right. Okay,
no.
So we're used
to seeing them drive really fast and turn left.
And turn left, but you know that was fun. We got another doubleheader weekend coming up this weekend at Dover. It's up in Delaware. It's called the Monster Mile. It's a really, really fun racetrack.
Monster Mile.
It's a mile long. It even has like a little dip in the curve in one of the turns. So that'll be fun. Two races to watch back to back. Then we're back to Daytona for the oval race what NASCAR fans know, the oval. And I'm pretty sure the playoffs start either after that or the week after that.
It's coming up pretty close.
So it's going to be fun. Next thing I want to talk about is college football. And I'm going to start out mentioning some ACC things, well, one ACC thing, and then I'm going to close out on SEC and be done with college football. All right, so this is kind of has something to do with college football and kind of doesn't. All right. So it was announced yesterday that University of North Carolina Chapel Hill was going to send their undergrad students back home because they had, I believe, in one day or a course of a couple of days, had 140 students test positive once they got to campus. Okay. Yeah, that's not good.
That's right? A lot.
That defeats the whole purpose of, you know, social distance and all that stuff, which based off videos I saw off Twitter, they were not social distance and all. There might have been some students that stay in their rooms and follow the rules. But like I said earlier in this podcast, it's the small number of people that refuse to listen that ruins it for everybody. Because there's videos of frat parties. There's videos of all these social get-togethers on campus at Chapel Hill, and then it comes out a couple of days later that there's 140 kids that are sick.
Right.
So they sent the undergrad students home, and, well, they told them they could stay if they wanted to, but they were going to be doing strictly online classes. There was going to be no in-person undergrad classes, okay, which is crazy to say.
Well, plus that'd be kind of weird if you're staying on campus, you're taking an online class, and Larry would, yeah, like... I mean, it's obviously like a serious topic, but you know, it's just a little something funny I'm thinking of. I mean, like, imagine like that one student actually, like, you know, like actually doesn't go home, but like chooses to stay.
Yeah.
And like they're in their dorm room, like taking the online class, and the building that their classroom's in is like two buildings,
yeah,
over,
right,
or something.
Yeah. So they told them they could stay, but the vast majority of them, they'll go home.
Oh, right.
Okay.
For sure.
Because they have internet at home. They can do the same thing at home that they're going to do in the dorm room. But that's beside the point. But that announcement sparked the question of, does this hurt the chances of there being college football, or does it help the chances of being college football? Because although they sent undergrad students home or told them there's no in-person classes, in their little statement they made, part of the group of people that could stay on campus were student-athletes.
For student-athletes, mm-hmm, okay.
Which... that sparks a whole nother debate on, well, how come the undergrad athletes get to stay? You know, because, you know, there's this whole debate on whether they should pay the players. Are the players employees of the school?
Right.
Are they deemed essential now because they get to stay and other kids say they're not being able to go to class, so they might as well go home? You know, my opinion, the school stuff aside, I think it helps the college football season.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have less people on campus.
Because you have less people on campus, less people to... have, you know, less,
exactly,
people to have like a less likely chance of COVID,
yeah,
being able to spread, even if it does happen.
It would be it would be impossible for the NCAA to make a college football bubble. You agree? It'd be impossible for them to have a NCAA football bubble, right? Or each conference to have
yeah,
a bubble.
That'd be impossible.
But if this is the case, and places like Clemson and Duke and Alabama, other conferences that are going to play, that plan to play football this fall, if they do the same thing that Chapel Hill just did, they're basically making their campus a bubble for sports.
Right.
For sports, which I think helps the chances of there being a college football season this year.
Oh, yeah.
Now, does that sound sketchy? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're putting the athletes on a higher pedestal than the other students.
Than the regular
students.
When
you claim that they're students first before, you know, students is first, right? You know, you go through this whole thing about there being like amateurism and, you know, they don't make any money there. We provide them this stuff on scholarship and all this stuff. And I'm not getting into the debate on whether I should pay them or not, but this doesn't help the clause of they're amateurs. You know,
they're
just students that happen to play sports. And then, you know, you're keeping them there because they make you money.
Right.
You know? But you haven't said that yet. And I'm not bashing Chapel Hill at all. I'm a Tar Heel fan through and through. But the whole argument, if you're against paying players for the name, image and likeness, this does not help the situation at all.
Right. I mean, it's like if you're involved with the athletic programs at a college and you're kind of advocating of the, you know, like, you know, like student athletes and, you know, amateurism and about them not getting paid, like if you're on that side of the debate and you're kind of like really pushing it, but then you kind of go out and do something like Chapel Hill did.
Yeah.
I mean,
I agree. I know exactly what you're saying.
Then it's not really helping your case,
right,
if you're on that side of the argument.
Exactly. Because going down to another division, Division II, what the SAC did, what the South Atlantic Conference did, canceling
all fall sports,
and then our local university wing it, they're putting off in-person classes to at least September. That's okay, okay? Because
right,
you're not going to be playing football anyway, right? It's not that you're keeping athletes on campus to play a game. Now there's still some they're practicing and whatnot,
right?
But
as far as like actual games, no,
right? And it wasn't just student athletes that were allowed to stay on campus. It was international students, and it was students that may not have good enough amenities to go back home to do their online classes. So they just kind of threw student athletes in there too, and with an emotional reaction, it just doesn't look the best when
right,
it comes to this. Is just a hot topic right now. But that's what I was talking about in ACC. That's it. I'm not bashing Chapel Hill at all. Go Tar Heels, rah, 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 Carolina. I'll still wear my Carolina blue no matter what. But when it comes to sports, this, I think it helps that helps right. the chances of being a college football season.
Oh, yeah.
But staying on that, but switching conferences, the SEC came out with their football schedules.
Yes, they did.
Now, they wanted it to be very clear that they say just because we have schedules out doesn't mean we're definitely playing, but this is what we're going to have if we do get to play.
Right.
Okay? I like how they set up these schedules, and I'll tell you why. They're 10 conference games.
Right. Right, it's 10 conference games, it's all conference games, and plus for a big powerhouse conference like the SEC, that's what a lot of people are waiting to see anyway.
Right, exactly. And if you know who Reese Davis is on ESPN, he's the host of College Game Day.
He's up
there with Herb Street and all them guys.
Oh, yeah.
He's been pretty vocal about the whole college football situation since all this stuff's going on. He called out the Pac-12 and Big Ten saying that the hopes of playing spring football is utterly ridiculous, which it is.
Yes,
if you're expecting your athletes to play in the spring, take 2 months off, and then play in the fall again, that's ridiculous. But he voiced his opinion about this 10-game conference schedule this year for the SEC, and thinks all Power Five schools should adopt this not only in a pandemic, but in the future.
Yeah.
And saying in a 12-game season, have 10 of your games be conference games. Have one other game be a Power Five rival from another conference.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
And then another game, whoever you want.
Whoever you want.
Whoever you want. Now, do I like that? I kind of like it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't really care much for a big change in when it comes to scheduling college football, because I don't think it's broken the way it is right now.
No.
I like it when these FCS teams play big Power Five schools.
Oh, yeah, same here.
If this was already the case, we would never have Appalachian State beating Michigan back in the day. Well, that would have never happened.
Right. Plus, honestly, too, dating back to just this past year, watching Army almost upset Michigan and watching University of South Carolina beat one of the big teams in there. Conference with Georgia,
right?
You know,
yeah. But getting on to, like, you know, I like when, and I don't want to say that I like when big teams beat little teams, because you know you've seen it all the time where like Alabama plays like Sam Houston State or somebody.
Yeah, it's like woohoo,
76-3 or 2. They might give up a safety or something, but that helps that smaller team because pay some big dollars.
Right.
I mean, Clemson and UNC Charlotte played last year, and Charlotte got the snot beat out of them, but they got paid.
Yeah, they got paid a lot of money.
They got paid a lot of money, which helps build their program, which has helped build it to where it is today. It's not a Power Five per se, but they keep growing. I mean, right now they're scheduled to have 2 ACC games on their schedule right now. But I like having 10 conference games, and I'll tell you why. Because there's some of these schools that don't play each other for years because they have these divisions in the conference.
Right.
It's like, you know, the ACC, we have the Atlantic and the Coastal. Carolina doesn't always play Clemson because they're in 2 different divisions.
Right, they're in 2 different divisions within that conference.
Yeah.
And that was honestly probably the one thing that's always bugged me about the conference football schedules, is that the fact that because they're in separate divisions, they don't always get to play everybody right. in their conference. I think there should be a little bit more fluctuation
and
there.
Georgia doesn't always play Bama.
Right.
It's like once every 8 years that happens, but like if it's not in the conference championship game.
Right.
Because they're in 2 separate divisions. We should have more of Bama and Georgia. We should have more of Virginia Tech playing Clemson. I mean, we should have more of that. I mean, I know it's just because you have so many teams in the conference, but I mean, in high school, whoever's in your conference, you play them. You don't just skip somebody just because you didn't have time to play them. Because you want to play in a non-conference. I like the 10 conference schedule.
Oh, yeah, same here.
I'm a fan of that. It would take a lot of getting used to. It would leave a lot of the smaller programs to fend for themselves, which would stink, would be something different, but that would get rid of, you know, these cupcake games that would, you know, you basically get paid to lose.
Right.
But I like it. I'm a fan of it.
Oh, for sure, man. Same here.
And as I close out, what I have to say about college football going back to Chapel Hill, what did you expect? You brought in a group of mostly teenagers to a college campus away from mom and daddy, okay, and told them, hey, just hang out in your rooms and wear a mask. No.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Come on. I deal with teenagers on a weekly basis. They don't listen to me barely. I love y'all. I really do. I love the youth, and y'all are a great group of kids, but I know teenagers.
Well,
come on.
Well, plus here's the thing. I'm in that target.
Right.
I'm in that target demographic, and I know how people like my age thing, and I know that if you tell them to just stay in your room or wear a mask,
yeah,
they're going to do everything they can to anybody do the exact opposite of that.
Anybody that claims they're shocked that this whole thing that it didn't work and within a week they had to send them home, you're lying. There's no way that you're shocked.
No.
No way.
No way.
But getting off college football, and as we close out today's show, oh boy. You know, Cody, I'm all about unwritten rules and things you should do and shouldn't do and sportsmanship in baseball.
Oh, yeah.
And any sports at all. We had us something very, very, very ridiculous happen last night, being Monday night in baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Won't you tell the world, you know, our buddies in Ireland and Germany and all across the world, what happened last night?
All right. So what happened last night was the Texas Rangers were playing the San Diego Padres. The Padres were absolutely killing the Rangers in the game last night, and the Padres were up 10-4 in the eighth inning last night, and the Padres' young superstar shortstop Fernando Tatis Jr. comes up to the plate with the bases loaded, 3-0 count, absolutely hammers a ball out of the park over the fence for a grand slam, and oh my goodness,
somebody,
you would not believe.
Some people got upset, didn't they?
And some people got very upset with him last night. And Neil, here's the thing. I've been around a college baseball dugout for 4 years. And trust me, I've heard plenty of debates just between the wing-it players of, you know, between pitchers and hitters on the unwritten rules of baseball. Mm-hmm. You know, like every once in a while, it'll just be a topic that someone talks about. Either the coaches will talk about with the players or the players will talk about with each other. And I've heard a lot of talk about the unwritten rules, and I've heard a lot of them. I can share a few of them with you. But when it comes to this rule, I don't see why this is considered an unwritten rule to where you can't but you should not swing on a 3-0 count if you have a big lead late in the game. I just don't see how that's a rule.
So to catch
unwritten
up,
rule.
So if you didn't see this last night, Cody gave a great intro for it, by the way. So Padres up big.
Oh, yeah.
Eighth inning, right? Their guy, Fernando Tatis Jr., I'm going to show my age real quick. I watched his dad play, okay? I remember when his dad used to play in the major leagues too. But this guy is definitely rookie of the year right now.
Oh, yeah.
Dude is tearing it up. He already had one home run in this game.
Yeah.
Already had one. And it's 3-0 count, bases loaded, and we're told that he was given the take
sign
from third base coach. Obviously, he either
ignored it or didn't see it,
which, I mean, he's a rookie. He might not have picked up on all the signs just yet. We'll give him some slack on that. But they're playing in Arlington. He hits this one to Houston. He knocks the mess out of this ball. Grand slam, they're up 14 to 3. I think it's 14-3, and they ended up winning 14-4.
I think
that's what it was. But as soon as the ball left the ballpark, the Texas Rangers manager is livid, and there's no telling what words he's uttering up under that mask that he has on in the dugout. And, like, I mean, I saw that, and I was like, okay, yeah, well, of course the Rangers, I mean, he's given up 14 runs. I thought he was just frustrated just because it was that kind of night.
Oh, yeah.
But then, to make things worse, the manager of the Padres throws Tatis Jr. under the bus. And so I gave him a take sign. He must have missed it. We're about to go over that. And then that led to Tatis
apologizing
for hitting a grand slam.
Yeah.
One of the greatest things.
Okay, wait a minute.
I'll hold it up.
There's your soapbox. Oh, okay.
One of the greatest things to happen in baseball, next to like no hitters and perfect games, a grand slam, the only time where you're going to get four runs on one swing at a bat, okay? And he's apologizing for hitting a grand slam.
Yeah, that's...
No!
That is ridiculous. And trust me, man, I've heard a lot of this talk over the years with baseball players, and it's a big topic. I personally have never understood it, because here's the thing. I'm a little bit biased towards hitters just because a lot of my good friends on teams were hitters. I mean, like, obviously, I had a lot of friends who were pitchers, too. But when it came to this topic, I didn't like talking about this topic with them. But, you know, but here's the thing. When it comes to me, if I'm at the plate, okay, here's the thing. I'm trying to do the best I can to get on. And, okay, let's just say that he just flat out ignored the take sign.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's obviously a thing where, you know, okay, you probably should listen to your coach just because your coach told you to.
By the way, that home run, he's now the leader in home runs.
Leader in home runs in the big leagues because of that home run. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
He probably knew that too.
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did. But here's the thing. Even if even if he knew that and he hit it, it's not like a thing, like, it's not a big enough deal to me to warrant him talking to the media about it and basically throwing him under the bus for it.
You deal with that in the clubhouse.
You deal with that. You talk to him in private or, you know, you're talking to him in a team meeting, or him and you one-on-one, a private conversation.
Yeah.
You don't dish out your problems to the media, and that is something with sports I will never understand why some coaches or players will just tell the media everything when it should be a one-on-one conversation.
This is something where he goes, hey, Fernando, we gave you a take sign. Great, great hit. But we got a take sign. Look for it next time.
Right.
No, you're not in trouble, but look for it. But no, he goes to the media about it and then goes to the point where Fernando Tatis Jr. apologizes for hitting this home run. You know what? Rangers, if you didn't want him to hit a home run, don't basically throw it underhanded down Broadway. You know,
here's the thing. Here's my opinion, and this is what I've always believed in any kind of situation where one team's up really big on another team. And, you know, if you don't like it, pitch better.
Right.
I'm sorry. I mean, if you don't like the fact that you're giving up some runs, pitch better or bring in somebody else.
Was it?
I mean, it's like, you know, like just change what you're doing instead of just getting mad at the fact that you're giving up that many runs. Just because, you know, like every once in a while you'll have a bad night pitching wise.
Was it Tatis Jr.'s fault that the bases were loaded?
No.
All right, then.
No.
Yeah. Was it his fault that they already scored 10 runs? Well, part of it was. He helped score with that. He had 7 RBIs, by the way.
Yeah.
But it wasn't his fault that the Rangers were pitching that bad.
No.
And of all teams to get mad about this, I'm pretty sure this is the same team. Well, not like roster-wise, but this is the same organization that beat the Baltimore Orioles 30-3 a few years ago.
Yes, okay, they did.
And they're getting mad about somebody running to score up on them?
Yeah.
Come on. Now, I agree with a few unwritten rules in baseball. You don't squeeze bunt when you got a big lead. You don't steal home when you got a big lead, okay, because that's purposely running the score up.
Right.
Now, did Tatis go up there and try to hit a home run? Probably. I know Ronald Acuna tries to hit one every time he's up there, and most of the time it works. But come on, where are we as, you know, as competitors and as lovers of baseball that we are getting mad at somebody for hitting a grand slam?
Yeah, I know.
Our own coach is getting mad at us for hitting a grand slam.
Yeah, and there was obviously a lot of responses around the baseball world by different players and by different reporters and things like that. Like, for instance, I have a quote by Trevor Bauer, and if you know who Trevor Bauer is in baseball, he's probably the most outspoken player in baseball as far as sharing his opinions out to the world.
Absolutely.
Or whatever. But anyway, he posted this after the game last night on Twitter. He posted 4 things. He said, number one, to Trevor Bauer, Trevor Bauer said this to Tatis. He was talking to Tatis in this. He was basically saying, number one, keep on swinging 3-0 if you want to, no matter what the game situation is. Number two, keep hitting homers no matter what the situation is. Number three, keep bringing the energy and flash to baseball and making it fun. 4, the only thing that you did wrong was apologize. Stop
That's
that.
Exactly right.
Well, and, you know, and here's the thing, too. Coming from Trevor Bauer, I mean, obviously, you know, Trevor Bauer is Trevor Bauer, but he's a pitcher.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't really normally, you wouldn't normally expect a pitcher to go out and say that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but here's the thing. Here's my opinion. And this can kind of go to, like, you know, like whenever a guy hits a home run, like he stands there and pimps it or whatever. Pitchers can do the same thing. You know, like if a dude comes up to the plate and he hits a ball 600 feet, he can slam the bat or do whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. And the pitcher, if he has like a big strikeout out,
he can
like,
strut. Yeah.
You know, if like he can jump up and down, strut, and, you know, mm-hmm. do whatever he wants to do. I mean, that's part of what makes baseball fun.
Right.
And what happened last night kind of ruined a lot of fun. And this is also kind of funny because this is also a quote after the game by the Texas Rangers manager, Chris Woodward. This is a quote by him. He said, quote, I didn't like it personally. You're up by 7 in the 8th inning. It's definitely not a good time 3-0. It's kind of the way we were all raised in the game, but I guess the norms are being challenged.
Oh, good gracious.
So that's, well, what,
so basically he said, don't score anymore on us because we're already going to lose anyway.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, if that's the case, then just tell your team to walk off the field and forfeit.
Well, see, that's my whole opinion about the whole thing. Is this just like, if you don't like it, then
walk off the field.
Right, then just don't even try.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I guess that's my opinion. I mean, it's like, because here's the thing. As a coach, I'm not going to tell my player to not try mm-hmm. ever on an at-bat. I mean,
a really easy way to not get a guy to swing at a 3-0 fastball?
Take him out of the game.
Don't throw 3 balls beforehand. throw three strikes, get him out.
That's true.
I know it's easier said than done, but if you don't want somebody swinging on a 3-0 fastball, don't throw three balls.
Well, that's true, too. And here's the thing, too. Okay, but here's the thing, too. Something that's kind of ironic about the Rangers manager, Chris. I'm just going to call him Chris. I'm not going to call him his last name. Chris.
Old Chris.
Old Chris. Well, here's the thing, too. One of the last times this was a big discussion was when – this was a big discussion a couple years ago when on the Los Angeles Dodgers you had – which is funny now because he's on the Padres now. But when the Padres traded – or when the Dodgers traded for
– Machado.
Yeah, Manny Machado in 2018. Well, guess what? He hit a home a grand slam on a 3-0 count in 2018. Guess who was the third base coach?
The
Chris
manager.
Woodward.
Chris.
He was the third base coach for the Dodgers in 2018 when Manny Machado hit a grand slam on a 3-0 count 2 years ago in the playoffs. So, if you ask me, that's a little bit hypocritical that you're like, you know, it's a little bit hypocritical because you're like high-fiving him and probably pumping him up after he did that. But then when someone else's team does it, it's not cool.
Yeah, and I'm going to read one more tweet about this, and I'm going to say a few more things, and I'm done with it because it's made me upset just reading about it. I found a tweet from a legend in baseball, Johnny Bench.
Ooh,
yeah. Didn't know Johnny Bench had a Twitter account until today. But he,
I didn't either.
He
wow.
He quote tweeted the video of Tatis Jr. hitting the home run. Okay, and this is his tweet. He says, "So let's say you take the pitch. So this is his direct quote. So you take a pitch. Now that was obviously a strike, right? This is me talking. So this obvious a strike, basically just threw it underhanded to him. Back to what Johnny Bench was saying. Now you're 3-1. So three balls, one strike. Then the pitcher comes back with a great setup pitch. Then you're at a full count. That's 3-2, right? Now you're ready to ground out into a double play. Everyone should hit 3-0. Grand slams are a huge stat." And he tagged Tatis Jr. in it. Look, baseball has had a terrible PR year.
They have, honestly.
Awful.
I'll be the first one to admit it. As a baseball fan?
Yeah.
I'll be the first to admit that.
We've had the Astros situation, right?
Yeah.
We had Rob Manfred basically slap him on the wrist, okay? We had almost no season, let alone because of COVID, because nobody could agree on anything, right? Then you have people getting sick left and right, and not listening to the rules, hence what we talked about today. And now we have grown men upset about other grown men scoring on them. You know how to handle the situation? Don't let them score.
Yeah.
Okay? This makes me think about a time when the Panthers were playing the Titans and Cam Newton scored, like he ran the ball in and he danced and a linebacker on the Titans got mad at him and tried to fight him while he was celebrating his touchdown. You know what Cam Newton said? "If you don't want me to dance, don't let me score." Simple as that.
Yeah.
You don't want to lose 14-4? Don't give up 14 runs. Do something about it. You were losing by 7 beforehand.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's all I got to say.
Oh, yeah.
This is just added to the list of baseball's horrible PR this year. We got grown men upset because they get scored on.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's also kind of funny that you brought up this topic to me because this has always been a topic I've always wanted to talk about. You know, in terms of baseball, is this one of the things I just don't agree with in terms of the unwritten rules of baseball? I mean, like, obviously some of them make a little bit of sense, but ones like these are just kind of ridiculous.
Utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Oh, goodness.
All righty, Neil, I got one little fun thing to add about baseball.
Oh,
I know
fun.
We just talked about bad about baseball, but this is – but.
So we can end on a good note?
But this is fun, okay?
We can end on a good note?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes. Okay, Oakland A's first baseman, Matt Olson.
Uh-huh.
Okay, here's the
who
thing.
You're basically a fan of now, right? You're basically an Oakland A's fan. Have you jumped on the bandwagon yet?
I have not jumped on like the bandwagon if they're my favorite.
Because you picked them to win the West. I was just...
Yes, I did.
Sure. All right, sorry, go ahead.
Yes, I did. Okay, anyway. So, but here's the thing about Matt Olson. He hasn't had a ton of hits this year. He hasn't had a really great average or hasn't had like the best season so far this year. As of right now, he's batting 176 on the year.
Ew.
So that's not great. But here's the thing, Neil. Okay, so as of August 16th, he went 3-for-5, and scored 3 runs. He had how many home runs? But he had 3 hits and scored 3 runs. The reason why I bring that up is that his last 7 hits before that were all home runs.
Wow!
His last 7 hits, he had 7 hits in a row. I mean, like his last 7 hits before that game where he went 3-for-5, his last 7 hits were all home runs. So basically, in the time span of around a week or so, he had seven hits.
Seven homers.
And seven home runs.
That's impressive.
And that was one of the little funny things I thought that was funny, because because that's one of the things how baseball's changed. You see a lot more home runs hit to the point where the guy's only hits are home runs. So I just thought that was kind
of
funny.
And it's a pretty decent debate topic that one of the hardest things to do in sports is to hit a baseball.
Oh, yeah.
I agree with that. And seven hits, seven homers, that's pretty impressive considering the company that you hit the ball off of. Because, I mean, I'm sure the average fastball is now in the mid-90s easily, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, these curveballs and all the other breaking balls are ridiculous now. I mean, you just see them left and right on YouTube. That's cool.
Oh, yeah, man, for
cool,
sure.
Cool story to close it out, but that's our show. Before we run the score up and get people upset, we're going to go ahead and close it out while we're on top and running hot. Listen, it's Major League Baseball. It's professional sports. Don't get mad at when the other teams are running the score up. All right?
Well,
this isn't little kids. There's not a mercy rule. These are grown men.
Oh, okay? Yeah.
Play ball. Enjoy it. Don't get mad when you could do something about it. I need to stop.
well, trust me, Neil, as a Red Sox fan, I've had to have that mindset last week. See, I just trashed myself so you wouldn't have to. I hope you're happy.
Yes.
Okay.
But that's our show. Go Braves. Sorry about the Red Sox. Hold on. Keep this in. Amber's talking to me. Hold on just a second. Hello, you're on the Reverend Babble podcast.
Hello. How are
you? Doing good. What's up?
Just seeing what you're up to.
Oh, okay. We're about to be done. We're closing out the show. You're going to be in the recording now, probably.
Oh, well, hello, Reverend Babble podcast listeners.
I think you're our first caller.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Ask me a question.
Okay. What are your thoughts on people getting mad when people run the score up in professional sports? Should they get over it, or do they have a reason to be upset?
In professional sports?
Yes.
No, you're getting paid plenty. You can suck it up for a little bit and get your butt whooped.
That's right. There you go. There's the famous words right there. No other words to be said. That's our show. Y'all have a great week. Follow us on social media, and we'll see you next time. Bye. Say bye, Amber.
Bye.